No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show that will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Maria Sanchez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBSRADIO and the number 1. Tonight we have a special guest, Damian Kidd, who's running for Congress from the 3rd District in Utah. He's a Republican. He's a Republican, Maria. We got him on it. This is a welcome back gift for my Republican friend, Maria, who's been on hiatus for a few weeks. I hope you had a wonderful time.
It was semester break, and it was fantastic. Thank you.
Good.
Yes.
Good. Well, Damian, are you there? Damian.
Yes.
Okay. Hi. Just to give you a brief introduction, Damian Kidd is a lawyer from Utah who's going to run for the 3rd Congressional District in Utah. Damian and I met because he was running against our nemesis in Washington, D.C., Republican Congressman Jason Chaffetz, who on a regular basis interferes with what's going on in the District of Columbia. So we're interested in supporting Mr. Kidd as a candidate because we want to get rid of Jason. And now Jason's dropped out of the race. So welcome, Damian. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Does that mean that you're running unopposed?
Well, right now I am the only declared candidate for the 3rd District, although it's pretty clear that there's going to be lots of individuals that will jump into this race.
And will be Democrats?
Well, Republicans. The 3rd District in Utah is a heavily Republican district. And in addition to that, there is a Democrat, Catherine Allen, who actually, before Chaffetz indicated he wasn't going to run for re-election, she had already entered the race as a Democrat and actually raised a significant amount of money following Representative Chaffetz's iPhone gaffe. And so she actually, she's somewhere in the tune of $500,000-$600,000 that she's raised. And so I highly doubt, there is another declared Democrat candidate, but, you know, it's going to be difficult for, I mean, Catherine Allen she's going to be the Democrat challenger here. So just with the sheer amount of money she's been able to raise, it's hard to imagine another Democrat that's going to take over as the front runner.
And what speaks to her popularity and the ability to track that kind of donor dollar?
Well, it was entirely divisiveness on the part of Jason Chaffetz. What had happened was, you know, you remember this a conversation he had, I believe it was on CNN, when the Republicans were proposing the first round of the Obamacare reversal, and basically he got on CNN to pitch that bill, and indicated that, you know, people should think about paying for their own health care rather than that new latest iPhone. And that created a rash of outrage throughout the country. And what had happened was, as she had already been, entered the race by that time, it was basically she and I. And so she got a mention on Rachel Maddow's show, and she got some tweets from Rosie O'Donnell, and basically created a wildfire of support behind her throughout the country. And so she was, I think she got, went from something like 50 or less Twitter followers to some crazy number, like 10 to 15,000 Twitter followers.
Wow.
Overnight. I mean, she did some media interviews during this whole whirlwind, and literally her phone was, you know, you could just hear the donations and the tweets coming in just every, you know, 5 to 10 seconds. And so, you know, and as a Republican, you know, I know it doesn't much matter anymore, but my big problem during that whole thing was Jason Chaffetz was not good for Republicans in the 3rd District here, because just by opening his mouth, the Democrat in a you know, heavily Republican district was able to raise $500,000 in a matter of days. So anyway, it was a very interesting time. The whole thing has just been very interesting. And then we have, you know, we have Chaffetz that indicated that he wasn't going to run again in 2018. And then the very next day, him texting a local radio host that he may not even finish out his term. So that was two days of pretty unbelievable news.
Well, you know, one thing that many people may not realize when you run for public office is you really don't look beyond the primary. The primary comes first. It's like, you know, if you go into the NBA finals, first you got to win the playoff games. And so I'm sure you're focused on the Republican primary and what challengers you might have in that primary. But let me ask you, why do you want to do this, Damian? Why, you know, here you are. It looks like you're a pretty successful lawyer. You've got a lovely family, three beautiful kids. Why do you want to come to Washington and do this? What motivates you?
Well, you know, it was two things. First and foremost, I just see so much divisiveness going on in Congress. And as the divisiveness has increased, Congress's approval ratings have decreased. I think there are many people in this country just like me who are tired of looking back there and just seeing our elected representatives either not doing anything or they're just fighting. They're just, you know, you see the president of either party, they go before a joint session of Congress. And, you know, the Democrat, you know, Obama stands up there and says something. You don't see a Republican get up out of their seat, even though President Obama might have said something that a Republican would agree with. But nobody will get up out of their seat. And vice versa, you know, Donald Trump might say something that, you know, a Democrat might be something a Democrat would appreciate, and nobody stands up. It's just so divided back there. It's so divisive. Everybody's so concerned about the R or the D next to their name that nothing's getting done. And what I mean by that is our gross national debt has doubled since 2008. We have no meaningful legislation on immigration. And these are two issues that the worst thing we could do is nothing. And so it's just this divisiveness, and it just seems like we need a new generation of leaders that will go back there and just say, guys, knock it off. We need to get stuff done for the American people, and it's not happening because people can't see past the R and the D next to their name. And so this is my primary reason for running. And secondary to that was it seemed that the poster child for divisiveness was our very own representative from the 3rd District, Jason Chaffetz. And so,
I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but you know, I just want to emphasize your first point that we promoted your appearance on the show, and I got pushback from Democrats who were saying to me, why are you interviewing this guy? I mean, I just was flabbergasted at the idea that you shouldn't have a forum based, you know, simply on the basis that you're a Republican. You're so right that this is the problem in Washington. we just can't come together and we can't compromise. And I'm glad to see that you're making an issue of that, because more than anything, I really feel that this is our biggest problem. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, and I look back to Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan. Seemed like they got together, got some things done. Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton came together, got things done. Where are those days?
Bob Dole and Ted Kennedy were friends. Fought on the Senate floor many times, but were friends and worked together on different issues. That's true, and we don't see that anymore. So we really do need to get back to that. And I think we're going to see that in the health care bill right now. I think you're going to see that there's going to divide around straight down party lines, not only in the House but also in the Senate.
So, Damien, may I ask why you've chosen this time to get into politics?
Well, so there is a path to victory, at least the way we have our primary system set up here in Utah. And there's a path, a specific path to victory for somebody who doesn't have, I don't have a whole lot of name recognition in this state, and I am not, I've had a very successful career so far as an attorney, but I'm not, independently wealthy. And so, just like Jason Chaffetz was able to successfully navigate that primary, to be able to get in through the primary, that was my intention, was also to do the same thing Chaffetz did, which is, somebody who doesn't have name recognition and who doesn't have, millions of dollars of his own money to put into a campaign. You get there by challenging an incumbent in the primary, in our convention system. The scenario, at least up until 3 weeks ago, was very similar to what Chaffetz faced in 2008, which was an incumbent who had been in for quite a while, who was growing in unpopularity. And there's a path to victory for somebody like me, just as there was for Jason Chaffetz. Just like in 2012, you saw a similar scenario with Mike Lee, who's now U.S. Senator. Nobody really knew who Mike Lee was, and he himself not independently wealthy. But he went and challenged Bob Bennett, who, again, similar scenario where you have an incumbent who'd been in for a while and was growing in growing. His unpopularity was growing, and there's a path to victory there. And so that was why the now is that I saw that there was a similar situation getting set up, and it was sort of you could see the path to victory there. Now things have changed, and so we've got to recraft our path to victory. But anyway, so that's the why. That's why we move forward with this sort of thing now.
Hey, Damien, explain to me quickly, what is your process? It's not a regular primary process. You have a convention?
So what happens is we have a caucus system where, literally people will be, they group them by geography, so it'll be a neighborhood. They will go and get together in somebody's house, and they will basically choose who their delegate is going to be, and those delegates go to a Republican convention, and they determine at that convention who they're going to put on the primary ballot. Now, if somebody at convention gets 60% or more, then they are automatically they are the Republican. They will be on the ballot in November. For the general against the Democrat and perhaps Libertarian. There's always a Libertarian that runs. And so you can see you don't have to go out and spend a lot of money to try to get name recognition and among, all the voters of the 3rd District. And it's a huge geographical area for the 3rd District.
Right.
Instead, it's a lot less expensive to go and engage in conversation and persuasion with, roughly 1,100 delegates that will be going to the convention. And so basically that's how Jason Chaffetz did it, was he reached out to each one of these delegates, didn't spend a lot of money doing it from what I understand, and was able to get in that way. Now, there ultimately was, he did not get 60% of the vote during that convention, but he got enough that when he walked out of the convention, he then had the name recognition he needed for the primary that I think happened in May. So it's a different path. And this time around, the big issue, the big question mark right now is how do we, if Chaffetz does not complete his term, which he has indicated that there's a likelihood that he won't, Utah is in kind of unknown waters because it hasn't been since 1920, sometime in the 20s, where we had a representative not complete his term. And so, you know, this is where we're at. This is what we're in the middle of right now.
And does the governor appoint if
right?
Yeah, who fills the seat?
What happens?
If he doesn't? Yeah, what happens?
So in Utah, if it's a senator, if it's a U.S. senator, the governor fills the seat basically. But for the House of Representatives, there has to be a special election that the governor calls, and that's the question mark. Is what is? I mean, there's some guidance in statute, but it's not. It's not as specific as we would all want it to be. And so we don't really know if it's going to be just sort of a free-for-all like we saw in Atlanta or in Georgia a couple of weeks ago,
yep,
where Republicans and Democrats, it's a big free-for-all, and we don't know if it's going to be something like that. We don't know if there's going to be a Republican primary, and if there is, you know, there's just the timing is going to be very interesting, and we don't know. We don't know what it's going to look like.
Wow.
So that's, you know, and you see a lot of people, I think, it's been almost 3 weeks. Nobody else has jumped into this race, no Republican at least. And I wonder how many people are just waiting to see what this whole thing is going to look like. So
I also wonder why he wouldn't continue through. What benefit or what would be the bigger plan for him to resign before his term is over?
Yeah, you know, that was, I mean, it was just a double whammy. You know, Wednesday we get the big news that morning that he's not going to, you know, national news, he's not going to run for re-election to the House. And then the very next day, in the middle of all the media interviews, he sends this text saying that he may not even finish his term. And it's... It depends on who you talk to here in the 3rd District. Some people just, you know, they see that as, well, maybe he just really wants to get back to his family and he wants that to be sooner than later. But there's a lot of other people that think that maybe it might be something a little less noble.
Well,
that's the best
Senator
way I
Brown
can put it.
Senator Brown is going to offer his speculation.
I would love to hear it.
I had a letter in the Washington Post last week which pointed out that although a Representative Chaffetz, I don't know if you saw this, Damian, but
I did.
I had a
yeah.
letter in the Post saying, even though he says he's not going to run, there's the Salt Lake City Tribune, the Salt, ran a poll that showed that the majority of Utahns don't want your Senator Orrin Hatch to run for re-election. So that's my speculation. My speculation is you will see him in 2018, and he'll be running for the Senate, because this is one very ambitious man. Damian and I first connected over the fact that Mr. Chaffetz is constantly interfering with politics in D.C. And he
and
does
why
that.
Does he do that, Michael? What is
he
his agenda
that
in that regard?
Because you get publicity from doing that. You mess with the District of Columbia, it's the nation's capital. This is a very ambitious man. There's no particular reason why he would do it that I can see otherwise, because it didn't help him at home. Is that right, Damien? I mean, people were in Utah were upset that he was interfering with the business of the District of Columbia. Am I not right?
Yeah, no. So, yeah, it's the only explanation. Well, it would be one of two things. One, exactly what Senator Brown just indicated. And we know that's true. The joke around here is that if you value your life, you don't get between Jason Chaffetz and a camera.
Yep.
And so that's been clear. Even people who are his biggest supporters acknowledge that he loves to be in front of a camera. One of the things that I found that was interesting through him basically saying he's not running for the House, and I'm going to start saying specifically he's not running for the House in 2018. So based on your comments, I want to be accurate, so I'll say he's not running for the House in 2018. But one of the things that was interesting about that was a media interview that he did. I think it was with, a Hollywood show, Access Hollywood maybe or something like that. But anyway, they were talking about him sleeping on his cot and how he, you know, was not the only one sleeping on his cot. And he indicated there was 80 to 120 others that were sleeping on their cots, other representatives. And I thought this was a great eye-opener because the only one we ever heard of in the last 10 years sleeping on his cot was Jason Chaffetz. Why is that? Why is he the only one that would come out and publicize that? Because he wants news. He wants news about himself. He wants media about himself. Others just don't really want that to be something that is talked about. And
well,
so,
and for those people that don't know what you're talking about, he refers to the fact that he sleeps on his cot, on a cot in his office in the Capitol, rather than having a residence in Washington, D.C., and that's what Damien's talking about. Yes, and I don't think a lot of people do that. No.
Is that to be available for votes that are called in the middle of the night or something? Is that the point?
No, it's that you're cheap as hell and you don't want to pay rent.
I see.
And the office comes with the job. But the Capitol is a very cold, it's a magnificent building, but it's completely made of marble. So it's not warm and homey and, you know, it's kind of stark and barren, I would imagine, to sleep in your office.
Well, to go back to the original question here, the second thing I was going to say is Jason Chaffetz has done a job of towing the party line, even when he abandons his conservatism to do that. It seems like he always, and not so much when he first got elected, but it didn't take him too long to get there, which is to basically put party and politics before principle. And that was my ultimate beef with him. And with a lot of our legislators back there, is that they can't seem to get past party and politics and get to what's best for the American people. And Chaffetz, I mean, the perfect example of it was when he went on CNN with the iPhone gaffe, and he starts pitching this bill, which, by the way, I thought was terrible, that one was. But he starts pitching this bill, and then at the end of it, they start asking him some specific questions, who's going to lose health care, who isn't, and his response was, well, we're just now starting to digest this thing. What he was really saying to everybody was, I haven't read the thing. I don't know what's in it, but I'm out here pitching this thing because that's what the Republican establishment wants me to do, and I'm happy to do it because I'll do whatever, you know, the Republicans want me to do. This is not the kind of leadership we need back there. So that's the two reasons why I think we've seen him do what he's done over the years and why he's been so mean to the district and so meddlesome, overly meddlesome. I mean, look at Daryl Issa before him, Republican, conservative, didn't act the way Chaffetz did. So,
well, and when you come to partisan politics, the the District of Columbia is the perfect political straw man to put up there because we're 92%. We voted for Hillary. We don't have any elected Republicans in the District of Columbia. We are the reason that we tried to partner with Utah in the D.C. Voting Rights Act was that Utah is singly the most Republican jurisdiction in America. And the District of Columbia is the most Democratic in terms of Democratic Party. One elected Democrat when we had the D.C. VRA, and there was only one elected Democrat in Utah, and there was one elected Republican in the District of Columbia. So we make the perfect foil if you want to be a party man. Picking on the district is something that many people who have fulfilled that role in the party have done in the past.
Well, my specific experience was when I first announced that I was a candidate, I had lots of D.C. residents reaching out to me, and yeah. And I'll tell you publicly, I'm sad that sort of enthusiasm for my campaign has dwindled with Chaffetz leaving office. I actually really enjoyed my conversations and relationships with D.C. residents, especially those that, again, saw the benefit of putting aside the R's and the D's and trying to get something done. But going back to, I started doing a bunch of research, the D.C. Home Rule Act, going all the way back to the founding of our country. And a little tidbit that I recently came across that I thought was very interesting, back in 2009 when Senator Hatch was pushing that legislation that you were just talking about, Senator, mm-hmm. I saw this quote from, it says here, Utah's newest congressman, Rep. Jason Chaffetz, will be a part of the effort to block the bill. Quote, this is just political bribery to include Utah in it. That's all this is. So he's had a beef with D.C., from the get-go, and I don't know what it is, but when you have somebody like Senator Orrin Hatch who's championing this thing, this is one of those where liberty's at stake. This is
absolutely
why I don't understand why we can't. I'm a conservative Republican. I love liberty, and it's just insane to me to think that my own country, we have 700,000 residents that pay federal taxes, but have no vote in Congress. And it has been sad to me that is the discussion right there.
Yes.
The
and
fact that somebody's a Republican or... What's that?
Let me point out that you still have friends in Washington,
yeah.
D.C. Because of your stand on non-interference with the District of Columbia. We still... You still have fans here, so don't think that you don't. Although, I've said this many times with Maria. I trash the Republican Party all the time for being partisan, but the Democrats are no less partisan. I mean,
right?
So like I said, I got calls from Democrats or tweets from Democrats. Why promote this guy? Well, the reason to promote this guy, let me tell you, is because he's a good candidate, and we need to promote good candidates. We need to promote good candidates on both sides of the aisle, regardless of what your political stand is. If the entire government were made up of Democrats, you wouldn't do any better than if the entire government was made up of Republicans. So there has to be a balance, and
right.
We have to work together. So,
and
well,
checks
I will
and
tell
balances
you.
And all of that,
yeah.
You know, devil's advocate and whatever.
Yeah.
Just to
One
make sure we've properly vetted the matters.
That's absolutely right.
One of the first things I would do, even before taking that oath, is I would reach out to, obviously, you, Senator, and as well as Representative Norton, and we would start talking about how do we revisit this 2009 legislation that was being put forth by Orrin Hatch and, gosh, who was it? Was it Lieberman?
Lieberman? It was Carper in the Senate, who's now supporting our statehood bill, but he was also part of the D.C. Voting Rights Act. You're right. It was also Lieberman. Lieberman was the big proponent. He and Eleanor Holmes Norton go back to law school together. He was the introducer in the Senate. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. And as far as D.C. statehood is concerned, now you've heard me say publicly that I'm not ready to go there yet. But if there were a vote to happen tomorrow, I don't know what I would do. But I can tell you, I've had lots of very interesting proposals. You know, the 2006. I think it was the 2016 Republican Party platform had indicated a favorable support for for statehood in Puerto Rico, for example.
Right.
That was in the Republican Party platform. And then right after that, it talks about D.C. statehood, and of course, the Republican Party is not a fan of that. But is there a discussion there that could happen? Sure, of course. This is what our country is all about. It's about taking opposing viewpoints. Can you imagine our initial constitutional convention? Everybody's coming from their different states, and back then, a lot of people felt like they were coming from their own countries.
Mm.
And they sat down in this room for, you know, how many days it was, you know, closed doors. And with the egos and the differing viewpoints must have been huge. And out came this Constitution that is incredible. These are the sort of things that we can do now.
Well, and people should be aware of this. There are 22 states now, 22 states that have passed resolutions to have a new constitutional convention. If they get 11 more states to do the same, that's all they need. They're two-thirds of the way there. They get 11 more states, the United States Constitution will be completely rewritten. So, you know, folks, now is the time to start talking to each other, because nobody wants that to happen. Imagine having a constitutional convention in the middle of all this divisiveness and rancor. It would be amazing to get anything to come positive out of that. So, you know, this isn't some pie-in-the-sky thing. This actually could happen, and we should be prepared to work together in case of that eventuality. But let me ask you something. I'm going to ask you the $64,000 question. What's your problem with statehood, Damian? What don't you like about statehood? What troubles you about it?
Well, my problem with it really is that when our founders sat down and talked about what they would do with this region that was the seat of our federal government, their concern was that you would have our elected leaders, coming to the, showing up in the district, living in the district, people who work for the federal government living in the district. And the concern was that if you have all those individuals residing in a specific state, that state could pass laws that could conflict and put pressure on our federal government. And so they were big believers in this separation of powers, state versus federal. And so my understanding is that was at least one of the big concerns and why they did not want this area to be the seat of our federal government to be a state. And so I have those same concerns.
The only thing I would say about that is that's changed. That doesn't exist anymore. It did exist in 1789, but today more people that work for the federal government live in Virginia and live in Maryland than live in the District of Columbia. So I understand that concern, but I just feel obligated to point out that they didn't want black people to vote. They didn't want Native Americans
women.
To vote. They didn't want women to vote. They didn't even want veterans who had fought in the Revolutionary War to vote unless they were 21 years old and they owned property, because it was a new government. They were scared. They didn't know how powerful the states were going to be, and they were afraid that the federal government would be very weak. We know now that 200 years later, the federal government is stronger than the state government. So I just don't see that as an issue anymore, although I understand it. But thanks for sharing that with us.
I'm curious, Damian, people might not know about your work with The Advocate. Do you want to share a little bit about what that's about, what you do with your day job?
Oh, sure. So there's two things that professionally occupy my time. One is an attorney, and we go by The Advocates, basically. All the attorneys here and all of the supporting staff, that is a name that we feel encompasses what we do, which is really we care about people and we care about what people are going through. And so it sounds cliche, but, even greedy you know, attorneys can actually have a concern and care for their clients. And that is what that is sort of what we're all about here. And so, and it's resonated real well. It's been successful, this concept of compassion towards people. It's how I operate my daily practice and how I would engage in my business in Congress, is thinking about the people that we're actually representing. And I think that that's something that, you know, not a lot of, I think there's a lot of congressmen and a lot of senators that forget that. The longer they're in, the more they forget that. But that's what occupies most of my time. But I'm also a truancy court judge for Provo School District. It's a voluntary thing that I do. I've been doing it for about 8 years. And basically, every other week, I conduct a hearing for all those high school students that are having difficulty getting to class, and you know, their grades are suffering, they're not getting to class, and a lot of that is, unfortunately, we see a lot of minorities that fall kind of victim to that sort of cycle. And so what my job is, and other individuals in the school district, just try to help these individuals realize a high school diploma and overcome some of the barriers that they're having trouble with. It just seems that I've fallen into, in my professional life, this concept of, you know, helping people that are disadvantaged in some way. So, for example, my attorney, being an attorney, you know, these are people that have ended up in some sort of an accident or something, and their livelihoods are at stake, and their ability to make ends meet, and in addition to their physical injuries. And so I think this sort of thing is lost when our representatives go back to D.C. and they forget about those people that are back home that can suffer the consequences of bad legislation and divisiveness and all this sort of thing. So that's what I do for my that's what preoccupies me when I'm not running for Congress. So,
well, now that we know this, we're going to have you back for another show just to do the truancy thing.
Cause oh,
I was
sure.
I was the poster child of high school truancy. I think I missed 160 days of my junior.
Oh my gosh!
My junior year, and there were 164 school days. So, yeah, we'll have to do a truancy show. And you know what?
Sure.
It would have been great if there had been somebody to intervene in that process. I lost both my parents when I was 15 years old.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And that's one of the ways I acted out. And I could have ruined my life if it hadn't been for a family that got behind me, made sure that I got my education and went on to university and got and stayed there until I got a master's degree. If I had stopped in the 10th grade, it's doubtful that we'd be on the phone with you right now.
Exactly.
Damien.
So Damien, do you have a team behind you, or what have you assembled in terms of support?
So from the get-go, before I even announced I was testing the waters, this was January of this year, I basically sought out all of the individuals who in some way were involved with, you know, as I talked about earlier in the show, this process of somebody that doesn't have already built-in name recognition and millions of dollars. How do I go about this path of getting to this convention and winning over the delegates? And so I was fortunate enough to, because nobody else was challenging Chaffetz, these individuals were available.
Mm.
And so there are people that were involved initially in getting Jason Chaffetz elected, you know, back in 2008, were involved with Mike Lee's campaign in 2012. So they understood and understand how to navigate that process. So I've actually had a really good team in place from the get-go. And we've added people over time. And so we've got a really great infrastructure in place. And so just right now, we don't know really what our strategy, you know, is, because we don't know who the opponents are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
We'd just basically be shooting in the dark. And so our what we've been doing is trying to be frugal, as we don't know where to invest resources at this point. And so we're just basically spending our time and focusing our efforts on certain things and kind of putting on the back burner other things, because again, we don't know what this whole thing is going to look like. We don't know if we're going to be doing a free-for-all Republicans, Democrats. We don't know if it's going to be a convention. We don't know if we're going to have 60 days or 90 days or if Chaffetz is going to serve his full term. There's just so many unknowns that it's kind of hard to develop a strategy when you don't know what so basically we're just trying to get my name out there and what I'm about and kind of what my philosophies are and again really my reasons for running, which is to try to overcome the divisiveness in Congress.
Well, and you know that it's really important to have those people that are plugged in when you're dealing with the caucus process. I went to the Iowa caucuses for the first time, the presidential caucuses, last year, and was just amazed at how the caucus process works. And we had a guy who had been a union organizer in Iowa for 35 years take us around, and he just knew everybody. We got in everywhere. We talked to everybody that we needed to talk to in the few days that we were there. So having somebody that knows their way around and knows every one of those 1,100 delegates, that's a really key in the caucus process. So I think you're going about it the right way. And I'll tell you what, if you want to get all those people in D.C. back on your side, all you need to do, Damien, is look a little further into the idea of statehood. We would leave the Capitol intact. Because I'll tell you, one of the people that was the attorney, was the chief of staff for our first delegate, Walter Fauntroy, always says, what we need is one Republican. That's what we need. We have no Republicans on the statehood bill in the House right now. And it has yet to be introduced in the Senate. It's about to be introduced in the Senate soon. So we're looking for that one Republican. And if you want to stand up and be that one Republican, I guarantee you get more support out of the district.
Well, is anybody...
And Damien, go ahead. Please answer.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, is anybody... And again, I know the argument against this is you shouldn't have to make a deal to... you know, preserve and advance liberty. But is anybody talking about some sort of a negotiation with D.C. statehood and statehood for Puerto Rico?
Yeah, you know, just like your situation, where we're waiting to see what transpires, on June 11th, the Puerto Ricans, and maybe we will try to have somebody on the show in the next couple of weeks to talk about this, but the Puerto Ricans are going to have a vote, and they're going to vote for on whether to become a state or not. They've already had a plebiscite on it. And when they do that, they're going to elect 6 United States representatives and 2 United States senators and send them to D.C. to play the same role that I play in lobbying Congress for statehood, assuming that they go for statehood, and we assume that they are at this point. And at that point, we will be talking to them because this is traditionally how states have entered the union, slave state, non-slave state, and Republican and Democrat. That's why we tried to team up with Utah for the D.C. Voting Rights Act. So although you couldn't call Puerto Rican solidly Republican, it's certainly much more Republican than the district. So we do talk to the resident commissioner down there, and yes, we're anxious to work together on some sort of plan, but we got to see what they're going to do first. So we're on hold until June 11th.
Having just been to Puerto Rico in the past 3 weeks, I asked random taxi drivers, airport personnel, hotel, because that's who I interacted with, our servers. They were not interested.
In statehood?
Yep.
Yeah, because they don't pay federal taxes.
Yep,
so,
that was part of it. And then the other part was that it's just fine the way it is. Why would we want to make any changes?
Well, we'll see what happens. And
I'll be curious because, of course, I didn't run into the average person. I was dealing with the folks in the service industry.
Well, and the kicker there, too, Maria, is for some reason Puerto Ricans, like in the plebiscite, and I'm not exactly sure how this works in the regular election, but in the plebiscite, people in the United States who were from Puerto Rico but were living in the mainland, I shouldn't say United States because we're all United States citizens, but people that were living in the contiguous 50 states or the other 50 states were allowed to vote in the election. So people on the mainland, let's say, for lack of a better term, voted heavily in favor of statehood, whereas people on the island, not as much. So it'll be interesting to see if they use the same system, how that comes out.
Yeah, I'll be
very curious. Yeah.
That goes hand in hand with, I mean, you have two populations of people.
Right.
And both with, you know, obviously the district are pushing for D.C. statehood, sounds like maybe more mobilized and more interested in that than Puerto Rico. But, you know, this is the time to have that discussion. And all I have to say is, whether you support it or not, be educated about it, come to the table. You know, even though as I've said, I'm not there yet on D.C. statehood, I will tell you I would be the first one at the table. We got to have people coming to the table and keeping an open mind and discussing and negotiating and because this is when great things happen, is when you get people from differing viewpoints. This is what I do every day as an attorney, is I take two different sides. One person, you know, is represented by an attorney on one side, and I'm representing the other side. And these two are battling, and in many cases they don't like one another. And to hammer out a resolution that at least both parties can walk away and say, you know what, that's not a bad resolution. I might not be, you know, doing cartwheels, but that's not bad. And to have both parties be able to say that and be able to walk away from it and move on with their lives, that's a unique skill.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that we haven't done in Washington for a long time. It's just one party after against the other.
And if Maria and I can agree on stuff, the whole world should be able to sit down.
Well, and it's true. In fact, Damian, the senator and I actually agree on more than we disagree on, which is interesting.
And I think that's true in general, too, Maria. I think that, but we just don't get it. You know, I think that most of us agree more than we disagree, really, on many issues. But, Damian, before we let you go, tell us how people can hook up with your campaign. Give us your website. Give us whatever contact stuff.
Well, the easiest is the website, Kid for Congress, and that's with two Ds, so think Captain Kid. Two Ds, Kid for Congress, F-O-R. That's one way. Social media, at Damian W. Kid. That's my Twitter, but my Facebook is Kid for Congress. And so, you know, and reach out to me. It was an exciting conversation I was having with D.C. residents, again, up until the time Chaffetz decided to not run for the House in 2018. And I love talking about liberty, and I love this potential that we have, you know, your license plate, no taxation without representation. To somebody who loves the founding of our country, is fascinated by it, and the fact that we have 700,000 U.S. citizens that pay more taxes, I think, than the state of Utah even, this is a place to get, you know, or if I were, how do I say it? It's like, it's the last place where we have to fight for liberty for people.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, you
it's,
keep
it's
on talking
huge.
Like that, my friend, and D.C. people will keep supporting you. I guarantee you. So thanks for being on the show, Damian. I see we're running out of time here, and we got to leave. But we want you back again as the campaign progresses, okay?
Yes, I'd love to. I'd love to.
And yeah, we, you know, on behalf of my good friend Maria Sanchez and myself, let me tell you that we want to be a voice for people in America, whether they're Republicans or Democrats. I want to be very clear about that, because you're absolutely right, Damian. We need to come together, or we're never going to resolve the problems that stand before us.
True.
Exactly.
So we're
I couldn't have said it better.
Thanks so much for being on the show, Damien, and we're going to leave you with my favorite campaign song. By the way, I'm not sure you want to be using Captain Kidd as your poster child, but this is my favorite campaign song. It's from a guy named Huey Long, who was not a particularly honest guy, but he had a great campaign song. So here's Every Man a King by Randy Newman. This was actually his campaign song. And thanks, Damien Kidd.
And good luck, Damien.
Maria.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Okay,
our pleasure.
We'll have you back. All right, Maria, you get the last word.
Just want to thank our listeners, as always, for making time for our broadcast. And if you have any suggestions for programming, you're welcome to email us. You can get us on the BBS radio, or you can find the senator and I through our social media contacts. And have a great week.
Thanks. You too. See you next week.
You too, Michael. Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
Give the people their right to vote.